Hey guys, it's Jason Webb. This is the show that highlights local business leaders and the movers and shakers of Minnesota. Welcome to Minnesota Made. On the podcast today is Jim Sebesta with Minnesota Occupational Health. And, you know, I first got in contact with Jim through one of my insurance companies recommended I work with or get to know Minnesota Occupational Health a little bit. So I gave you guys a call or I sent you an email or something, and you were the first one to reach out to me. So you've been my primary contact over there. And you know, after meeting you, meeting one of the doctors, going on a tour of the facility, it seems to me like you guys really got your shit together. So that's a great thing. It's rather uncommon, you know, that I see in any profession, somebody that takes pride in what they do and does a really good job. And so when I find those people, you know, I definitely take a note and try to send business their way as much as possible. So, you know, I guess a good way to get us started, Jim, is just talk a little bit about what you do over at Minnesota Occupational Health, and then we'll get more into your backstory. But, you know, what's the main role that you play over at Minnesota Occupational Health?
Yeah, well, and we really value partnerships like yours as well, Jason. So, you know, at Minnesota Occupational Health, we've got four dedicated occupational medicine clinics, and we really focus on the kinds of services that are no longer available in the general medical community. So whether that's work comp injury care, whether that's pre-employment functional testing to make sure people are functionally fit and matched to a job, or a lot of the regulatory compliance things, the DOT exams, the drug screens, the silica, the respirator clearances, the audio testing, all of those kinds of things we not only offer, but me and my team, the business development team, really functions as a resource to those employers, because very often they'll come to us and say, well, I want to do this, but they don't have a plan, they don't have a process, they're not really sure what they need. And so a lot of our job is to help just answer those questions, ask the right questions, and guide them down the path so they can as quickly, easily, and least expensively as possible be compliant or meet those safety and health needs of their employees.
Okay, good. You know, I guess I should rewind a little bit and mention that a lot of people that listen to this podcast or I focus as having guests on the podcast are what I would call business leaders, right? The mover and shakers in Minnesota. And I feel it's very, you know, very important that all employers, especially like contractors and manufacturers that I focus on, get aligned, networking with, build a relationship with a good occupational medicine doctor versus just, you know, letting the patient choose whoever we're to go to with no recommendations and, you know, maybe seeing their family practitioner who doesn't have any kind of advanced training in occupational medicine. It makes a huge difference for both the patient and the employer. So do you want to talk a little bit about that? Like the difference of going to Minnesota Occupational Health, maybe for an injury or even a pre-placement exam,
sure,
versus just the doc down the street?
Yeah, you're spot on. I mean, we see examples every day, literally every day. We've got 12 full-time providers. And so we have firefighters, for example, that might have had a heart attack and they've got an implantable cardio defibrillator. They're not really medically fit to be a firefighter anymore, but their cardiac surgeon has released them to full duty with no restrictions. We see people who have uncontrolled diabetes or who are literally falling asleep while they're doing their DOT exams. And when they've gone down the street to get their DOT exam or their whatever, they've been cleared year after year after year. And our job isn't to prevent an employee from working. And it's certainly not to restrict how many workers a company can hire, an employer can hire. We want to make sure that they're the right fit for that job and that they're safe, so that when they're driving their 18-wheeler down the road next to my family, we can have a high degree of confidence that that's going to be a safe driver who's taking care of whatever their underlying medical condition is. So it's very common, and construction is a great example. You might be trying to hire somebody with certain set of skills, which means they've got a lot of experience. But what are the odds you're going to hire somebody who's in their 40s or their 50s with that experience level, who doesn't have a pre-existing, you know, knees, backs, shoulders, whatever? So when we partner with employers that way, we want to find out what those limitations are. So it's not a secret. And so the employer can hire that person still, knowing they're not going to ask them to lift 80 pounds over their head. They're hiring them for this other set of skills and tools that they bring to the table. And so in that sense, we're really just trying to make sure it's a good fit and that everything is out in the open. So the employee, the worker, no longer has to hide their low back injury because the employer already knows about it. And they've already, you know, decided how to accommodate that. So that's optimal.
Yeah, a recent thing that just happened to me is with one of my newer clients, they were already working with a occupational medicine doctor. And I took it upon myself to go, you know, visit that facility, meet with one of the owners there and take a tour. And man, it was eye-opening, especially the room in which they would conduct the pre-placement examinations. You know, it was like a little 8x10 room, half full of boxes, and they had a, you know, an old treadmill and an old, what it looked like, a leg extension machine from the 1970s. And that was it. That's where they're going to determine if somebody can be a bricklayer or not.
Yeah. And well, that's actually better than some of the things that we see. We inherited a lot of employers recently when another major health system just got out of occupational medicine. So there are virtually none left. Park Nicollet Health, I guess Health Partners is still, but Park Nicollet, North Memorial, Alina, they've all shuttered their doors on occupational medicine, almost without exception. But we see some of those employers who've been doing syphilis testing on a pre-placement basis. Well, even if we do syphilis testing, what do you want us to do with that information? We can't tell you as an employer. Or taking lumbar x-rays, low back x-rays. Well, just because somebody has a deformity of their low back does not mean that they can't do the job or that they're going to be at higher risk of a low back injury in the future. So it's those kinds of things, bringing current state-of-the-art occupational medicine practices and methodologies into this market. We have our 12 providers meet every 2 months, and we pick three or four topics that we just want to make sure we're all on the same platform. We're all making the same decisions and the same criteria. And when there are, you know, new ideas or new thoughts, we'll form a working group of a subgroup of those providers to work it out, figure out what is best practice and what should our best practice be. And I don't think that exists anywhere else in this region.
Yeah. Yeah, that syphilis, that's...
It was so bizarre.
Strange. Now, I mean, if they did the syphilis test and they came back positive or negative and they reported that back to the employer...
You can't, because that would be a HIPAA violation.
Yeah, HIPAA...
Not work-related.
Yeah, unrelated, or ADA, or something that make them... It could get the employer in trouble, essentially. Right. Right?
Yeah, but this group had been doing this test for a major employer for years and years, and no one at the employer had ever questioned it. So maybe they never reported a positive, or maybe they never found a positive, but it shouldn't even be there. So, yeah,
I agree. Strange. All right, well, let's learn a little bit about Jim. You know, where did little Jim grow up, and how did you get from there to where you are now? What did that look like?
Yeah, I was born in St. Paul, grew up a little bit in Rockford, which is kind of almost in your stomping grounds.
Yeah.
Actually on Lake Sarah, between Loretto and Rockford.
Sure.
And then mostly grew up in Crystal. got my bachelor's degree at the University of Minnesota in public health education and then business administration, and was working ambulance on the side. Started a business when I was working at the Red Cross, actually. I started a business that after I got laid off because they were way over budget and they laid a bunch of people off, doing industrial safety training and consulting. So I ran that business for almost 20 years, decided I wasn't having fun running the businesses like I did before. So we ended up selling actually four businesses at that point in time, and went out to the workforce. So I was kind of back in the EMS field again, because now I was selling and training, educating on all sorts of emergency medical services products. So I'd ride in the back of the rigs all over a 6-state region and teach the medics how to use the equipment on live patients or doing in-services and things like that. And after about 10 years on the road, my son was beginning his teens and realized that I should really be home more. So that's where I got back into occupational medicine. I've been doing that ever since. Okay. And it's funny because a lot of my customers with my old company, Spectrum Safety was the primary business there, Spectrum Safety Consultant, are still my clients today, the ones that are still around. And they remember me and I remember them. So that's fun.
So did you say you were an EMT at one point in time?
Yeah, and I used to teach EMT and first responder. We had a sub specialty too, where we got into wilderness medicine. So we were doing wilderness, we were the first actually wilderness first responder, wilderness EMT program in the state of Minnesota. So Outward Bound schools up in Ely would hire us to come up and train their staff up there. A lot of camps, a lot of different groups.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I went through, I got my EMT certification when I was going through my Army medic training down in San Antonio, Fort Sam Houston. So once we completed the Army requirements to become a medic, they gave us the option of testing out and getting our EMT certification.
Yep.
I took the test, I passed, but I never worked as an EMT, I guess.
Yeah, I worked for a company that's now, they've gone through probably 5 or 6 iterations. They were called Health Central. Okay. So they were Northern Hennepin, Western Ramsey and Anoka County.
Sure. Back in the day. Gotcha. All right, cool.
And that was back in the day where paramedics were just starting to become a thing. So at first we were responding to everything, but after a while, the paramedics, the advanced life support units, really were responding to all the 911 calls as they should have. But not being a paramedic at the time, I didn't want to just do nursing home shuttles and things like that.
So. Yeah, gotcha. Okay, so back to Minnesota Occupational Health. I think you mentioned earlier on, it seems like the services you provide kind of fall under three main categories. The pre-placement exam, right? The injury treatment, and then regulatory type issues, right? One of the areas I think you really shine is the whole pre-placement examination part. And when I took a tour there, you have that, I forget, work performance center or something in the back.
Perfect. Yep. You got it.
Called. Yeah. And that was really cool. I mean, not only would you see a lot of the typical things you might see in a gym, but you also seen things like wheelbarrows, ladders, plywood. Did you have like a shoveling pit? Or something.
Yep,
like
shovels. We have stairs to nowhere. We have ladders. We have scaffolding. We have all sorts of props, fire turnout gear, police officer, utility belts, harnesses for fall protection. Yeah.
Yeah. And the idea is, if somebody's going to have to climb up and down ladders for their job that they just got, they could potentially be getting hired for, well, let's see if they can actually do it. You know what I mean? Versus put them on a treadmill and listen to their heart or something. It's completely different biomechanics that are involved. And you guys, I think, do a great job. I don't know if anybody in the state of Minnesota does a better job of directly trying to imitate or simulate the exact tasks or requirements that are going to be placed on that potential new employee while they're on the job. And that's rare, I think.
It is rare. It is rare. We want to be able to tell that employer that this employee or this candidate is both medically cleared. So we do a medical physical, DOT or non-DOT, beforehand, just to make sure that they don't have fresh scars from their surgery last week, or that they aren't, you know, 220 over 180 blood pressure, or they're spilling sugars in the urine. So once we medically clear them, we want to be able to test the essential functional demands. Those are the magic words, essential functional demands of that job. So we work with employers to define what those are if they haven't already. It's very common for employers to give us a job description that says, must lift 50 pounds. And so my response is, well, 50 pounds from what height to what height? How many times a day are they lifting, twisting, pushing? Are they pulling? Are they over their heads? And what else are they doing besides that lifting 50 pounds? So we really want to define those demands so that we can test them. And yet there's a limit to what you can do in an hour, which is about the average length of a work performance test. So we design them in a way that not only tests those demands, but also creates fatigue. So that instead of lifting something one time, they might be lifting it 15 times at you know, three or five different heights at different weights. Besides the pushing, the pulling, the climbing, the kneeling, static postures where they're just holding something for a long time and have to hold that pose. There are a lot of jobs where it's not the activity, it's the static posture, but just staying in one position all the time that's so taxing on the lower back or the knees and things like that. Right. So we want to be able to evaluate those things and create enough fatigue so that we can start seeing them compensate. Mm-hmm. You know, with my knee and my shoulder and my low back, my herniated discs, even though I work out a lot, may not show it, but even though I work out a lot, if you ask me to lift something a couple of times, it's not a problem. But if you put me through an hour long evaluation, you're going to start seeing me compensating for those injuries. And so that's what we're keen in on. So now we can have a conversation with that applicant and say, so tell me about your shoulder, because it looks like you're favoring it, or you're really keeping it close in, or you're, you know, your legs are going way wide out when you're bending over to pick something up. So we're trying to uncover what's happening so that employer can make an informed decision, but so the employee is also protected when they get hired for that job, because the employer knows not to ask them to do those things.
Sure.
We have now, we just opened our third work performance center. So our Egan Clinic, our Shakopee Clinic, and now our St. Paul Clinic, we took over the entire original first floor and we've rebuilt it. So that opened literally last week, doing functional testing. And you kind of alluded to the exercise equipment as well. So sometimes we use that for work performance testing, but other things that we do in those rooms are functional capacity evaluations that are directed by an insurer, for example, but also work conditioning. So work conditioning is where you've got somebody who's, you know, they might have had hip replacement surgery or maybe it was a work injury, maybe not, you know, some time ago, and they've finished their PT, but they're so deconditioned and they're so afraid of moving, because when they move, they twinge, and when they twinge, it spasms, and spasm hurts. So they're just afraid, and they're really not able to go back to work. So in work conditioning, they literally clock in 4 to 6 hours a day, 2 to 4 days a week, and we take them through elements of their job, so the work simulation part, combined with strength building, the agility, the balance, those kinds of things that will build them up and build their confidence up to know that they can do these movements without triggering that pain spasm cycle. So that's also really crucial. And those folks actually transform in front of your eyes over the span of 4 or 5 weeks.
Okay. So it takes it one step beyond the typical physical therapy they might get, you know, down the street.
Yeah. These folks have already, they've already completed their PT, but they're so not able to really go back to work, either physically or psychologically or both.
Right. Now, during the medical exam, is the medical doctor able to ask the patient questions like, have you ever got injured at work? Have you ever, you know, been on a work comp claim or filed a work comp claim. Are there things they can and cannot ask the potential employee?
They can pretty much ask anything that's related to that condition. And we also try to capture that information in a medical history as well, right, in a form. And we'll validate that during the physical exam. So we'll actually go over, you know, it's very common for somebody to walk in and just draw a line through all of the no answers, like, no, I've never had this problem before, and just a line through all of them. But as we talk to them and we do the physical exam, everybody gets put in shorts, right? And we'll say, well, look at the scar on your low back. Tell me about that. It looks pretty fresh. So those are all opportunities for conversations that happen during that medical exam. And sometimes they're not relevant to the job. Other times the physician or the provider will give a heads up to the occupational therapist who's going to do the work performance test. And not everybody does work performance testing. And not everybody needs it if you're an administrative job. Or
anything. Sure.
But it's that level of interaction. And now the OT knows to look specifically for those things and make sure that they're evaluating that as part of it. They might find something in their work performance test, and they'll walk that individual back to the examining provider and say, new information, reevaluate this. Here's what we found. Okay. So it's that connection between the two to be able to say they're both medically and functionally cleared to do the job. But yeah, we'll find things that are in the medical exam that we cannot divulge to the employer. And if it is job related, if it would impact their ability to do the job, we can usually only say that they have a medical exclusion, or there's a reason that we can't clear them, or we're waiting for their specialist, their cardiologist, or we can't say which one, but their specialist to get back to us with more information. Hmm. So people that are being treated, sleep apnea is a good example, diabetes, et cetera, we'll maybe reach out or have them reach out to their specialist or their primary care provider to get us information to show that they are actually using their CPAP machine instead of falling asleep all day long, or that they are, you know, their A1Cs are really, they're maintaining their blood sugars at a normal level. So sometimes we do seek that information out to be able to medically clear them as well.
So there's the medical part of the exam, and there's the functional or physical part of the exam.
Right.
If I'm the employer and I send John over to you for a pre-placement examination, what are you guys able to relay back to me? Is it basically thumbs up, good to go, or thumbs down? Or are you able to give me more detailed information on what was done and how he performed?
Yeah, medical information is considered HIPAA protected. So what the employer gets back from the medical evaluation is a one-page form that says, you know, here's the examining provider, the date, the blah, 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 and this person is or is not medically cleared to do the job or has a limitation. You know, we may have somebody, a DOT exam is a good example, where they might only be qualified to get a short duration card. 90-day card, or a 6-month card or a 1-year card. So we can't tell the employer why, but very often it's because we're trying to, you know, the person's safe to go to work, but we want to make sure they continue to use their CPAP. They continue to manage their diabetes or whatever it is that they've got. And so, so we do have some options there in terms of getting people to work, getting them set up for their insurance so they can pay for these kinds of things. I'm not sure if I answered your question.
Yeah. I mean, you can't really tell much. You can let them know if they're able to or should be able to fulfill the physical requirements or fulfill the requirements for that job, but you can't give them what their blood pressure reading was or right. if they now, filed a work comp claim or not, that type of thing.
Right. Now, on the functional side, as long as we create that work performance test based on those magic words, those essential functional demands, the employer gets to see that entire test result, every line item. Okay. And they can see which of those things were met or not met, or which things they might need to accommodate if they choose to. Yeah. And as long as it's based on those essential demands, both HIPAA, EEOC, all of those things sway towards the employer and say they get to see those because these are things the employee has to do to be able to perform their job.
Yeah.
There's an element of a work performance test we always begin with, and it's range of motion, stretching, not stretching, but range of motion and a couple of other tests along those lines, wrist motions and things like that. That's considered medical information. So the employer never gets to see that page. But once we get into testing those demands, everything is open to the employer. And we would actually send that directly to the employer along with the medical clearance page from the provider.
Okay, got it. All right, so pre-placement exams. You know, when I meet with a new prospect and I start talking to them about injury prevention and mention that the best way to prevent injuries is to hire the right people. And there's some statistics out there that most workplace injuries occur with new hires, like within the first 6 months or 6 weeks of the new hire. And that could be due to a lack of training, but that could also be due to the fact that they were never meant to perform that job physically. They just couldn't handle it.
Yep.
And the best way I know to make sure that you are hiring employees that are fit for duty for your position is this whole pre-placement examination. So, and if you're going to spend the money to do it, you might as well get it done right at a facility such as yours. That's the way I feel.
You're right. I mean, the medical exams are pretty inexpensive, right? The medical physicals. And those are important because we may not want to put that person, not everyone, into a work performance test. Maybe they're, again, surgeries or things like that. Work performance test for an hour, it's like $115.
Yeah.
So that more than offset by the cost of an initial injury.
Yeah.
But you're right. A lot of times those new employees are just not functionally fit to do the job. You know, maybe they've got the biomechanics okay, but they're so out of condition themselves that they're not able to do it. We've got a major employer that we work with who's always done a lift test. And lift tests were very popular, you know, well, they still are in some circles, but it's really just lifting this weight from floor to shoulder or floor to waist or et cetera, X number of times. And as I said in the example earlier, I can do that, but I'm a work comp injury. I'm three work comp injuries waiting to happen if you put me to certain jobs. Whereas if you test those things, you're going to likely uncover them. So,
and the importance of, I mean, I would assume most employers would know what their experience modification factor is, but you know, every year your work comp insurance company is going to report to the Work Comp State Bureau in Minnesota, it's the MWCIA, what your payroll was and your claims, most recent claims in the last year or what have you. And then the MWCIA is going to calculate your experience mod. And then your experience mod, whatever number that is, it's going to be used as part of your calculation for your workers' compensation premium. So with an experience mod of one, and if your work comp premium is $100,000 with a mod of one, but let's say you have some claims and your mod climbs up to a 1.3. Now you're looking at approximately, rather than 100,000 for your work comp premium, now you're looking at 130,000. And one is considered average, you know, minimum mod, you can usually get your mod down to a right around a 0.7-ish. And that's another thing to consider. If you think you're doing a great job because you have a mod of 1.0, well, chances are you could save another 30% on your work comp premium by trying to reach the minimum mod. And all this ties back to hiring the right people, making sure they're fit for duty so they don't get injured on the job site, resulting in a work comp claim. And another thing that you said, you guys, one of the categories of the services you provide is the injury treatment part. And the part I like about Minnesota Occupational Health is you're very pro and you understand the importance of getting injured employees back to work as soon as possible with the right restrictions. Now, this does several things for both the employer and the employee. The employee has been shown they're going to get better much faster. They're not going to sit home and get that victim mentality and, you know, drive their husband or wife crazy because they're not leaving the house and decondition their body and basically end up feeling worse and so on. But the employer benefits because if they're back to work on restricted duty or light duty of some sort, and they can keep that work comp claim as medical only, no indemnity portion of that claim. Well, now when that claim, medical only claim, and when I say no indemnity, that just means they're not sitting at home at work and getting paid 2/3 of their average weekly wage. They're back at work, right? So they're at work, you just had to pay the medical bill. And now that claim gets reported over to the MWCIA. And because Minnesota is considered a ERA state, they're gonna reduce the total amount of that claim, the impact it has on your mod, by 70%. So if it's a $1,000 medical bill, really only $300 are gonna be plugged into the calculation for your new experience mod next year. So can you talk a little bit about your guys' awareness on the importance of getting injured employees back to work as quickly as possible. But of course, you have to consider what it is they're doing and putting them on the correct restrictions.
Yeah, absolutely. Great summary too. I really think it begins with causation and determining causation, right? So our providers are kind of forensic in the way that they will try to ask the right questions and match that with the physical exam that they're finding when they're treating an injured worker to say, does it make sense or not? What were they doing at the time? You know, is it really work-related? So first and foremost, that has to happen. In order for us to make informed decisions, sometimes employers have information that would be really helpful in us determining causation. So if you know as an employer that this person was out chopping, you know, lumber, wood all weekend long, or they were out riding their motorcycle and their bike flipped and now their knee is hurt Monday morning, and they're coming in for a knee injury, that kind of background information is very, very helpful. We'll listen to that. We actually will allow an employer manager or supervisor into the exam room once the patient's treated. Not right away, but once everything is treated and they're stable and everything else, just to hear the restrictions. So the patient, the worker, the employer, supervisor, manager, the provider, they're all hearing the same thing at the same time. And that's really important. Besides the written documentation, the next element is just defining work restrictions that make sense, that are understandable. I remember I saw something not too long ago because an employee, a worker in Minnesota can, unless they're part of a managed care plan, can go wherever they want to go for work injuries. So we work very carefully to make sure that we're not seen as the company doc, right? But at the same time, I saw a work restriction from a different clinic group last month, and the restriction was unable to work outside. So what is it outside that's the problem? Is it the dirty air? Is it the wind, the temperature, the rain? I don't know. I'm not sure how that corresponded to the work injury that this person had. So when our providers create a workability and define what those work restrictions are, we actually like to take tours. It's been hard the last year with COVID. Our providers like to take tours of employers' job sites and to be able to look and see what those jobs entail or what are the pieces of equipment that they're working with all day. So when someone comes in and says, oh, I have to lift 500 pounds all day, every day long, you know, our providers can turn to them and say, actually, I've seen your job. In fact, I've seen you in your job. And I know that this is what you do. And that changes that dynamic quite a lot, but it also gives them credibility because they understand what this person's going to have to go back to. And so those work restrictions are really critical. And then lastly, the follow-up, you know, not everybody needs, you know, prescription pain medications or muscle relaxers, things like back injuries get better over time. And they get better a lot with ice and with mobility. Parking yourself on the couch, speaking from experience, is like the worst thing you can do if you just lay there with low back spasms. So as uncomfortable as it might be, getting that person up and moving just to some degree will actually speed their recovery. So that's really significant, I think, as well. And that's just the whole sports medicine model. We treat injured workers as injured athletes, which is what they are, what a lot of them are. And you don't see injured athletes sitting on the, you know, laying on the bench for hours and hours and hours.
Right.
With very few exceptions, employers can accommodate restrictions. Right. So that's right. Our assumption. That's our fundamental assumption, is that if we write a restriction that they understand and that makes sense for an employer to be able to apply, and the employee knows it too, then they should be able to accommodate that. Yeah. Rarely will we prescribe pain meds or muscle relaxers, and if then, only to get them over that hump, right? So it's not going to be a month supply because we expect to see them back in 2 or 3 days to reevaluate, to make sure they're on track doing the things that they should be doing.
So. Great. Yeah. I think any employer needs to have a good occupational medicine doctor at hand. You know, like I said, I focus on contractors and manufacturers with my business. And if you start having too many work comp claims, too many injuries, and your experience mod starts increasing and it gets over a 1.0, for some contractors, that means, especially the commercial contractors, that means there's going to be future jobs that they cannot work on, they cannot bid on. And, man, that can bankrupt a company just due to the fact that their injuries have gotten out of hand.
Yep.
So it's no joke. I mean, sure, it costs a little bit up front to do the pre-placement examination or what have you, but it's small in comparison to what's at stake, not only if you compare it to the increased insurance premiums, but also the indirect costs or not being able to bid or work on certain jobs because your mod is too high. It can be a scary situation for sure.
And you're right. And Jason, you alluded to it before too. There's the other intangibles, which is the cost of the worker, right? We want to make sure that if the employer can accommodate light duty restrictions, that employee knows that everyone he's interacting with all day long at work, even if he's just pushing a broom or stacking paper clips or going to a volunteer agency to get paid to do that, and employers will do those kinds of things just to keep them engaged, that socially, psychologically, economically, they're on track for getting better, not for, because nobody makes money, right, on work comp. Yeah. If you're an injured worker, you can't scam the system and live on that for any length of period of time. Right. So we really want to partner with the employee, the worker, and the employers and the insurers to make sure that that person stays on that right track.
Yeah, yeah. Having clear and efficient processes go a long way. And I was just thinking about a case recently where one of my clients had an employee who hurt his ankle on the job. And they said, okay, we'll go to Minnesota Occupational Health, get checked out. If you need work restrictions, we'll abide by them and get you back to work right away. And he is like, no. That sounds like too much of a headache. I just want to get laid off. Just put me on unemployment. Because that's about this time last year, you put me on unemployment.
Yeah.
But they were busy, right? And they couldn't justify putting him on unemployment, but that's what he wanted. And man, we had to argue with this guy, this employee. I mean, it could be viewed as insurance fraud if it comes back to my client, if they're trying to avoid a claim. It could be employment practice lawsuit later on. Who knows what? So, but we stuck by our guns and we're like, no, you got to go see the doctor. And if the doctor says you have restrictions, we'll get you back to work right away. And, you know, after a day or so of arguing with this employee, maybe 2 days, And he ended up coming back to work the next day, full duty. Oh, it's fine now, you know? So, but I mean, just imagine if they would have said, okay, yeah, we'll put you on unemployment. And then that employee tells his friend who also works there, yeah, just get hurt a little bit and they'll put you on unemployment. And now they got, who knows what's going on? You know what I mean?
And that really happens at employers all over, well, the country, but even within Minnesota, mm-hmm. it still happens.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, have clear processes in place, not only for your hiring practice with the pre-placement exam, but if they get injured, you send them here, you get restrictions, you abide by those restrictions, get them back to work right away. And it's the only way to go. It's the responsible thing to do, I feel.
Yeah. We don't, you know, there are, private practice clinics, there are specialists, there are chiropractic groups, not to pick on chiropractors, I have a great one, who, you know, I birthed 7 of your kids, your wife's pregnant again, you want some time off for fishing opener, here, take an extra 2 days. And we actually see those kinds of work restrictions or non-restrictions. And so that's not our MO. And if it really is a legitimate work-related injury, our goal would be to keep that person as mobile and as active and as productive as they're able to safely do.
Yeah, good. All right, well, I guess we could wrap things up. You know, if there's an employer out there who's looking for a good occupational medicine facility to send not only their new hires to for the pre-placement exam, but also injuries that happen on the job and any kind of regulatory type concerns they might have regarding the DOT, silica, and so on. And they want to find out more information. What's the best way to get a hold of you, Jim?
Yeah, they can actually go to our website, and there's a lot of information there. There's links on our website to just hit the contact us button, or they can give us a call and ask for the business development team. Our parent company is Summit Orthopedics. So when they call, if they don't get through to a scheduler right away or a switchboard right away, if they get put on hold, they might hear a message about Summit Orthopedics, but that's us too. And so they can just give us a call and we'll get them taken care of. We try and respond to those kinds of requests within a couple of hours. And normally we can go from zero to completely done if the employer knows what they need and what they want within a call or two. So it doesn't have to drag on for days or weeks.
Okay. It's not as hard as you think it might be. Right?
Not at all. No, because this is all we do.
Yeah.
And that's probably the other real key difference is that we're not a primary care provider. We're not going to ask for their private insurance information. We have no vested interest other than to make sure that an employer is hiring and keeping and taking care of their safe and healthy workers. So
great. Awesome. Well, I really value you and your service and your company there, Jim, and I appreciate you being on the podcast today. And that's it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the opportunity, Jace. It was really good to talk to you again.
Sure thing. All right, Jim. Have a great one. Thank you.